Welcome to Circular Firing Squad. I'm Marty Gentius, a counseling faculty at Kent State University and a host for Circular Firing Squad. It's been a while since we've done a show. Everybody's schedules are all screwed up and conflicts on my end in getting the show going. So it's good that we have a pretty good sized crew tonight. We've got five members, five questions, and five answers to each question. Questions are generated by each squad member and run from the academic to the acerbic. Let's find out who's on the show tonight.
Hey, everybody. My name is Mitch Conrad, a second-year counseling student at Cleveland State University.
Hi, everyone. Brittany Pollard-Kozadowski, professor at Indiana University of Pennsylvania.
Gina Martin, assistant professor at University of Wisconsin-Whitewater.
Hi, everyone. Elliot Ingersoll, professor of counseling at Cleveland State University and host of Apply Topically.
Mitch, you're up with the first question.
All right, let's go. What is your least favorite word or phrase that people have started using?
I can't believe I'm about to say this on a podcast, but butt hurt. I cannot, anytime I hear that word, I can't. I don't even have more to say about it. It just drives me up the wall. So I guess I'm butt hurt about butt hurt.
I thought a lot about this question, Mitch. And I think the one that comes to mind for me is, hey, can we meet? I'm at that point in the semester where I'm just done meeting with everybody and anyone.
I don't think I've got one that's recent. Something that bugged me for decades is the fact of the matter is, and when I'm in dialogue, usually some form of heated dialogue, and when I was chair, I would get this a lot, and I'm not sure. I would stop people occasionally and say, I'm sorry, I suspect we're dialoguing about at least three matters. I need to know which matter you're referring to. And then I suspect there's multiple facts pertaining to each of these. So which fact, which matter, and what context? Let's start there. So that one still bugs me.
I don't understand. All of you kind of took serious phrases of language. And I interpreted this question altogether differently, and I'm about to upset a lot of people. The least favorite word or phrase that people have started using, neuro-anything, but the top of my list is trauma-informed. I've got people who are in their first semester, students in their first semester, and they're already talking about trauma-informed. So it has infused itself into society to a point where everything is trauma-informed, which to me I find very ironic because Freud said that all of our psychopathologies are due to some type of trauma. And people will disavow Freud for that, but now everything seems to be trauma-informed. So that's my fringe phrase. Trauma-informed, and it's replaced any neuro-anything.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm thinking about that. That's kind of interesting, Marty. I've always felt like the informed part, like it could be like a different word or something like that. I know for me, like, this is something that's bugged me ever since I got into graduate school, is the word like termination. I feel like it's just too harsh. And I feel like we just need a little, a slightly more gentle word. I don't have any like suggestions, which is bad, right? Because I've been told, right, by my many people, right, if you're going to complain about something, right, like that, I should have a suggestion right now. And I don't have any suggestion for termination. But termination to me just feels a bit too extreme. Like we just need something a little more gentle. I don't know.
Yeah, that's interesting to think about. Now you're going to have me thinking of a word we could use to replace that.
I'm still thinking of it too.
You racking our brain.
Well, we used to call them customers, you know, and so maybe the customer has finished their service.
The service?
I don't think that's it, Marty.
Okay.
All right. Here is my question. What is one surefire way students can get you off topic in class? or I guess clients as maybe more appropriate in session.
So I'm going to go for the student route. One of the things that I notice a lot when I teach is that whenever students ask clinical questions like, how is this really in the field? Or what do you actually do with clients in this moment? I tend to launch into a progression of narratives around many clients that I've seen and give a lot of details and, you know, just share kind of some of that context for students. And I think that they really enjoy that. I mean, I enjoy it. I don't know about them, but I think they do. And they tend to ask those things. And I think some of that like hands-on application, getting to see that and hear that is exciting for them. So that tends to take us from the topic of the class.
My first thought was like a fire alarm. That would do it. They pulled one of those. I don't know that I'm necessarily known for staying on topic. And I know that in my evaluation, students will say sometimes when I would go from narrative to meta narrative and, you know, they would just start getting lost. So I would say that that's probably not necessarily, that's probably more part of my style. But I suspect, you know, anybody who wants to talk about the political intrigue of the pharmaceutical industry, that'll grab me. That'll hook me probably every time.
You know, anything gets me off topic. Anything gets me off topic. I have a tendency to tell a lot of stories in my class. And, you know, like this week I went off on this story in family therapy. We were talking about John Gottman. And John Gottman taught me abnormal psychology at the University of Illinois. And then 25 years later, I went on this story on how I got drunk, and not in his class, but I was at a couple's house who had the microphones all over the place. And I went in there and realized that it was part of the study, and we got drunk on old Bushmills, and we made Craig Claiborne brownies. So I put a recipe of Craig Claiborne brownies up on. I will go down any rat hole that comes up in class. I'm easily distracted. I can't talk about religion and I can't talk about politics. Otherwise, it would even be worse. But I am probably a little too transparent with my students, particularly when I'm teaching couples or family. I'm talking about relationships a lot. And often that fits in with the relationship I have with Aileen and sometimes the relationship I have with my family. So anything can get me off topic. And then it's sort of, for me, it's like 5 minutes of an attempt at stand up. And I will just riff through things as I can. And then if they start reacting, it gets even worse. So if you're expecting content in my class, well, yeah, it's all on the web. We'll give it to you. If you're expecting entertainment, well, that's up to you. That's what gets me off topic. Like there is a topic.
Kind of like the sound of this class. So this happened to me this past, a week or two ago. We have this presentation, right? As a student, and it's like an hour plus long presentation. And it's actually about like couples and families. But, of course I get an opportunity to, if I want to talk about couples therapy, I get to talk about MDMA, assisted couples therapy. And so the thing is that sometimes, like when I'm talking about like a particular, like psychedelic, like MDMA or, you know, psilocybin, somebody will say ketamine and I'll lose it. And I'll go on this rant about ketamine clinics and how, you know, we need to be, they need to be doing better. We need to be having people, right? This is the exact rant that I go on, right? We need to have people inside of those clinics providing therapy to, sitting with actual clients. Like one of my friends came up to me and showed me this clip because I'm apparently now the ketamine guy, right? Even though that's not like what my goal is in life, but showed me this clip of like Real Housewives, which I've never watched a moment of Real Housewives in my life, but it was about like a ketamine episode, and I'm sitting there and I'm going, I'm really now having like discourse about Real Housewives and ketamine. But I guess if that's what gets people interested in psychedelics, we can have a conversation about that. You see how this goes you know? And so, you know, that's why an hour presentation becomes an hour and a half presentation and so on and so forth.
That was very meta. I feel like it just happened in real time.
That was the intent.
Loved it. Well, all of you shared something that was still relevant to your teaching, right? Like stories about clients or pharmaceuticals or couples and family. For me, it's a lot simpler. If somebody brings up any good pop culture celebrity gossip, I am gone. I am ready to take that road and just abandon any agenda I had for class. Anything soapboxy too. My students tend to learn pretty quickly what my hot button issues are and know that if they bring those up, I'm happy to stand on the soapbox for a minute and wax and wane about all the things that I'm so brilliant about, that I have strongly informed opinions about.
The next question is, what sport do you just not understand?
Ah, okay. Yeah. Basketball. If you're not a fan or know about it, basketball is kind of like volleyball with trampolines. I saw it up in Saskatchewan the first time. It is played in Canada and other countries. I believe it was developed in Brazil. The person who developed it speaks Portuguese, so I'm not sure if that tracks. But anyway, that it was South American area. And yeah, it's volleyball with trampolines. So not without its entertainment, for sure.
I went with a little more conventional choice. Now, y'all know I'm a baseball fan, and particularly a fan of the Chicago Cubs, which doesn't garnish a lot of friends here in Cleveland after we beat them in the World Series.
Doing my best, Marty.
But basketball. I just do not get basketball. And people are really into it, and it's the guys running up and down the court, back and forth. It stops occasionally. There's a foul. Basically, it's the same thing. Get the damn ball in the basket every time they run back and forth. And I don't see the beauty or the strategy of the sport. So if I watch a basketball game, say it's like the Final Four or something like that, I'll turn in for the last 15 minutes of the game. Well, the last 15 minutes of the game could be the last minute and a half of the game, which makes it even more unbearable for me. But I get baseball. I've kind of gotten into the zen of that. I kind of stopped watching football because all the head injuries and concussive stuff that's going on. But basketball, don't get it.
When you started your answer of saying you were going to be more conventional, I'd like to know what you think is unconventional about basketball.
I guess and this sounds very self-centered. I never heard of it. And then I started, while you were saying that answer, I was thinking, maybe I should say curling, which I like. I mean, I can watch that. Basketball. Nope. Sorry.
All right. So I took this question actually a little bit differently in terms of, like, because I think I would like to understand the sport, but I have no idea what's going on. And I'm talking about cricket. It's like one of the most popular sports in the world. And I think they've got like a big, like an enormous league. And like, part of me wants to think it's like Saudi Arabia, but maybe I'm like getting that mixed up with like the whole golf PGA thing. I just don't understand how to play the game. And I've tried to watch some cricket and understand what's going on. And the way that I like first got interested in cricket is actually by watching Bluey, which is a kids television show. And the dad really enjoys cricket on that show. And, you know, sometimes it'll be like on the TV and I'll like go on and like later and be like, okay, like how do you play this game? And you've got to like throw a ball and like hit some like Legos. And I'm probably like offending some people right now who play cricket. I want to like understand cricket because it seems so exciting and it seems kind of like baseball and I love baseball, but I've never been able to figure it out.
Isn't that like Wagner too? Like it can go on for days.
I feel like it. Yeah, it was. I've read some of the history about it, and they used to have leagues in, I think, England, where the games would sometimes last like multiple weeks. Oh. I don't know how that works, but, you know.
Oh my gosh, I love it, Mitch. I also adore the show Bluey.
That was fantastic.
Children's show.
It's so good.
Well, believe it or not, my answer is curling, which my husband used to be a curler. So I really have put in the effort to try. I've been to matches and I've sat through the painful things happening on the ice, and I just don't get it. He assures me it's a lot of fun, but never appealed to me, and I don't think I invested enough time into trying to understand what was actually happening in front of me. But
my fantasy is that it was all the guys who couldn't skate, you know, can't play hockey. All right, let's try the curling.
That probably tracks. I'll have to check in with him on that.
You know, I followed the last soccer FIFA World Tournament, and I thought, and my son played soccer when he was younger, so I knew enough about it. I always thought that was a long and kind of stretched out, boring game. I've gotten more into it, but I now have MLS because, not because of the sport, but because the hope that they will do some immersive video where you're down on the field, and they've started to do some of that. That for me would make that sport more interesting. Maybe if they did immersive video with curling too, you know, you're following along with the person with the brush or whatever. What do you call it, Britt? What's the brush called?
I know it's called sweeping, but I don't remember what the brush itself is called.
All right, we'll get letters.
A broom. It's a broom.
Okay, there we go.
It's just a broom.
I'm just kidding.
If it's an MLB, that would make sense.
Wow, it's right. Actually a broom, and we're all, you know.
That would be.
Listeners, send your cards and letters too.
Yes, someone fact check me.
I'm going to be Googling that right now.
These are great. I know pretty much none of the sports that everybody has talked about. So this is why this question was written, was because I feel like I don't know a lot of sports, and I feel like I've given it the old college efforts a little bit for a number of them. Not curling yet. And not what you said, Elliot. Basketball?
Basketball.
Basketball. Okay. Yeah. Also never heard of it. Basketball. My husband played in college, and I like generally understand what's going on, the objective of the game. And then the one that I've been thinking of for this question in particular has been pickleball. This is the new rage, all the rage.
Oh my God. Yeah.
It is. It's taking the world by storm. And I got roped into playing every single week. And so the first, most weeks still, I'm not going to say how many I've been playing because it's kind of embarrassing. And I still just don't understand the scoring, and I don't understand where I'm supposed to stand. Going back and forth.
Gina, did you ever play tennis?
I sure did for like many years of my life. Yeah. So you would think I would have an upper hand.
Didn't help you. Yeah.
No. I but still don't pickleball. Know the lines though. No. I've been
wanting to try it, but you have to have friends in order to play it. So that makes it a little bit, because of having played tennis in the background. In my background, and I got a virtual pickleball game that you can play, because I have no friends, that you can play with Meta 3, and I thought, okay, this will be cool, and it kicked my ass because the ball weight appears to be different than it is in tennis.
Yeah, and it doesn't bounce like it does in tennis.
Yeah, okay.
So you would think, I mean, and the rules are not the same as tennis. There's a kitchen. There's like, you have to stay out of the kitchen. It really threw me.
Can I change my answer?
Oh no. What have I started?
This feels like a religion that I'm like about to join. Like I'm going to get invited to like pickleball, and I'm going to start playing pickleball. And that's how it that's how it happens.
I am fascinated by it, frankly. And if somebody invited me and gave me the pickle bat or whatever you call it, I would be happy to try it out.
I did get roped into it And I do keep going because it is kind of like a religion, Mitch. You are correct. And I hate to say it, but I kind of love it. It's
there's an old person inside your body dying to come out.
This is how it starts.
There it is.
Well, slight change of tone for this next question. What are some cost-cutting measures you would recommend to higher education?
Wow. Because you and I essentially submitted very similar questions. Mine will come up next. Immediately, I think of reducing administrative overhead. You know, the percentage of tuition dollars that go to the percentage of all the money that comes in that goes to run the university and administration is ridiculous. There are too many upper management positions that don't pay for themselves in the process. So we all, you know, as faculty, we all have to, like, you got to have 20 people. You got to teach these many courses. If you're going to teach during the summer, you have to have these many people to offset the cost of what your salary is. None of that goes on. There's no cost analysis of what an administrator's job does and what it costs to do that and what comes back to the university for those dollars. So I don't get it. I mean, I that would be the first place I'd go. I was going to go for low-hanging fruit, like, really expensive basketball and football coaches. University doesn't need to be a feeder for professional sports. And then people say, but it's income generating and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, but I would just go with first looking at the cost and return from all the top-heavy administrative stuff that we have.
Yeah. One of the things that I know as someone who has been pretty tied in both during my undergrad and graduate career with a lot of university life, I have always been frustrated in that I feel like my college is not trying to be a college, or that my university is not trying to be a university. It is trying to be something else. It is trying to be a business, and it understandably should be a business, right? Like, there is part of that, right? You have to, you know, like, be in the black, you know, and actually produce some sort of capital in order to keep things running. And also, like, I want that to be focused more on faculty and students. Like, I am going here to learn. And every single time that I observe, like, my tuition dollars going towards something that is not furthering my education or furthering the education of my peers, that's what I get frustrated about. And I feel like I see that all the time. I saw that at, not just the universities that I've been to, but hearing from other people too. And I think that, right, there are decisions, right, that I am not privy to about, like, what people think about how to actually, like, make the, you know, have the university make money. But I think, like, especially in terms of, like, a post-COVID world, like, get back to the basics. That's kind of what I want to see.
Yes. Administration, upper administrative costs certainly was at the forefront of my mind for this answer. I would also say wasting dollars on things to boost faculty morale that have no impact on faculty morale whatsoever. T-shirts and stickers and mugs just aren't going to cut it these days. That's probably a wry answer. I would say also, you know, there doesn't really seem to be a need right now for multi-million dollar new buildings. We've got plenty of buildings that could stand a renovation or two, certainly, but I don't know. Investing money in new things when the old are really struggling seems to be a little bit counterintuitive in my mind.
Outside of the show, I've got some stories around both of those issues, but I won't do it in the middle of this. You almost got me distracted and pulled down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, I feel like all of these are valid. I think from my perception, you know, the brand new state of the art redone thing that has just been redone not that long ago. And our building on campus actually has not, it's been passed over for renovations for many iterations of things, many. And now I think in the next 10 years, they say they're going to redo it. But we have like, you know, stains on the ceiling, cinder block wall, like it's falling apart and it's time. And yet we have a beautiful state of the art, perfect business school, beautiful gym, beautiful football arena, all of these things that just seem to take priority. So I think prioritizing things perhaps a little bit differently might help to increase some of these budget restraints.
Yeah, these are all excellent ideas. Yeah, I mean, yeah, first I agree with Marty, the administration thing is out of control. I mean, we all understand it takes 10 administrators to make one good decision, and those maths, they're not mine, but it's unfortunate, but we want to keep it at a minimum. I would love a kind of an exploration about how specialization could be used statewide. You know, if you have like SUNY has the New York system, would there be a benefit to centralizing some of this and then having campuses specialize in certain disciplines? I don't know, but I'd sure like to look at that. And, you know, most of your costs is grounds, facilities, and personnel. So you've got to cut those. You know, I thought, yeah, but do we need another new building? They build a bunch, you know, one set of dorms, and then they say, oh, well, people want something different. It's like, well, wait, who's going to live in all these dorms? Yeah. So building things too. And yeah, I would say you got to cut low performing programs. That's the piece that it's got to happen. And it should have started happening years ago. And it's going to be done brutally. And I think that that's unnecessary and unfortunate.
Well, along those same lines, I'm going to ask a question that more personalizes it. You know, that's why I felt keeping both of these questions in was safe. There's been a lot of talk about the budget crisis. I think at least my institution is talking a lot about it, trying to find a way to balance the budget. And I think we're going to do it. But there are institutions all over the state of Ohio that have handed in deficit budgets, which put them in risk of the state coming in and say, now we're your daddy, and we're going to decide who to do, what to do. But it's a drain on faculty. I think everybody just wants the other shoe to drop so we can figure out what to do. So how are you handling it?
So as a student, admittedly, this is not affecting me as much, and it is affecting people all around me, right? Because, you know, I work up at the university, I'm pretty involved at Cleveland State, right? Not just in our counseling program, but in with some other departments as well. And it sucks to have this sort of cloud hang over everyone's head, right? And I don't just mean, right, like employees of the university, like faculty and staff. I mean, like students, like we hear about it too. You know, like there have been times in my class where like someone has leaned over and just been like, hey, did you hear what's going on at the university? Or hey, did you hear what's going on at like another university that's also like having a budgeting problem? You know, and so I think people who are in higher education right now, I see, and as someone who like wants to work in higher education someday, it definitely worries me about like getting into the industry because I really want to contribute, but I also see like how the actual budget affects morale, right? Like Britt mentioned, you know, like t-shirts and mugs do not do anything. You know, like just increase people's salary by $50, you know, like that would be better, you know, for the university to do it that way. You know, people are, I think, more focused on doing their jobs and focusing on their specific things that they're doing. And, you know, I think the budget cloud, the budget rain cloud from, you know, sort of like the reminding me of the old like a Pooh Bear episode, like the tut tut looks like rain, like, you know, that seems to be just kind of like hanging over, not just like any individual university. I'm not going to single an individual university out. It's hanging over like higher education right now, and it's kind of worrisome.
Yeah, you're right. It is hanging over the entire industry, and it's concerning to think I joined this industry in 2015, and in just a decade, how much has changed is wild to reflect on. So I think about this question personally and professionally. How am I handling this? And I think from a personal standpoint, you know, it's often felt lately like I don't have much choice but to weather the storm and hope for the best. Having tenure and promotion and still not feeling secure in my job most days is terrifying. Certainly not something I ever expected at this point in my career. And I think commiserating with others at other universities who are going through the same thing certainly helps. I think that, you know, just remembering why I do the work that I do and keeping my head down and staying at it is all that I can really do. And, you know, from a professional standpoint, I think my focus has really been on transparency with students and with colleagues. Not pretending that students don't know what's going on, not pretending that we're not in the news every day as a state organization. It's hard times. I wish I had a rosier outlook on it.
Yeah, I think the way that I've been personally dealing with it is the great coping skill of denial. Just ignoring it. leaving it be in the background, letting other people fight the fight. I'm a relatively new faculty member, so I think that it's something that is really very much out of my control and out of my hands. And so recognizing my part in that. And similar to what you said, Britt, just doing my part and trying to be a great educator despite all of those circumstances and really just blocking it out. Another thing, and similarly too, I'm at a state school, so there's a bit of, you know, commentary in the news and things like that. So just acknowledging it and recognizing where we're at, but also just kind of trying to keep to my own.
Yeah. And some, I mean, we all have to do that at times. And I struggle because, I have leadership-itis, and this just trips that trigger. And I'm just like, you know what? Shit, no one knows what the hell they're doing. I mean, let me just do this. All right. Not that hard. You just lack the will. So yeah, I'm like looking at different things in the, that keeps reorganizing us. And so every time they reorganize us, they need to hire. And I'm just like, but it all, so much of the game feels rigged. And then I have a series of letters to Governor DeWine. Governor, I hope you're a listener, because I'm the guy who's saying you need a higher education czar. And I'd like to have that talk in person. I got some ideas around that too. Like, go, because the biggest problem is that the only thing that moves slower than higher education is the military. The whole system is dysfunctional. You've got to revamp the whole system. So I deal with it by having grandiose visions, but I'd be willing to act on that. And I have sent these letters, and a copy of the Ingersoll DeWine correspondence is always available for interested listeners.
You know, a couple of nights ago, I was watching, had the stream going, and I was watching Annie Hall, and Woody Allen does a joke at the end of that where he talks about, he takes his brings his brother into a psychiatrist and says, my psychiatrist, or my brother thinks he's a chicken. And the psychiatrist said, well, you know, we can have him committed if you want to do something about that. And he goes, no, we need the eggs. And that's how I feel sort of about being in higher education right now. It's really crazy, but I still need the eggs. And I think it's part of why, I mean, for me, my mind gets to work at a different level. Okay, let's try and solve this problem from a leadership standpoint. And I'm lucky enough to be on college advisory committee and feel like I have a voice. Sometimes it's incredibly cynical. But I'm involved in professional organizations where there is some trouble in the organizations, and that gets me salivating. But frankly, I'm also in a safe space. I'm at retirement age. Our department chair, who's probably 20 years younger than me, was lamenting about all the stuff that's being thrown at him from the administration. And it's not him personally, but that's what all chairs are facing right now. And I was like, you know, I can stand, I've got maybe 3 or 4 more years, maybe more, maybe less. But I told him I can stand on my head and for, you know, on broken glass during that period of time. This is going to be a bigger issue for you because you're going to be around longer than I am. I love my job, but if it gets too weird, I can always bow out. And right now, here comes the next crisis. You know, we lost a lot of faculty through death, retirement, and we just replaced those faculty with 4 new positions, which is a blessing that our dean and university gave to us because they believe in the program. But those new positions can't do the program management stuff that needs to be done because they're protected for promotion and tenure and the work they have to do with that. So where does that go to? That goes to the senior faculty. So it's sort of like, you know, half the faculty, twice the work is what, when students go, how's it going, Dr. Jensius? Half the faculty, twice the work. So I'm going to stick that out and see how things resolve, but it's, I always have that in the back of my head. And I don't know about you, Elliot, but there's always that, yeah, you know, a 66 and a half, my Social Security's not going up anymore. I can just say goodbye at this point. That would be fine. But we'll see. I will probably be around a lot longer than anybody wants me there. So that's it for
you've done that.
So that's it for our series of questions. Maybe something a little more cheerful in the final shot question. What are signs of spring for you?
So I have this like really embarrassing admission right now, because the sign of spring for me is baseball. As soon as baseball starts, I don't care like when I don't know when spring is on the calendar, but as soon as I hear like on the radio, because I still listen to like Tom Hamilton on the radio here in Cleveland, like I'm there. And lo and behold, it is April 6th, yesterday. And I am like, you know, I haven't heard or seen any baseball so far this year. I wonder, did we start late? And it turns out they start in like March, like mid-March now, like with these overseas games and everything. And I just missed it this year. And so like my, you know, the Cleveland Guardians have already played like 7 games. I've missed watching all of them. You know, like I had no idea last week. I was just like really, I guess, really busy. And so that's my sign of spring, but I missed it.
And they're doing well too.
Yeah. Crazy.
Mine is sort of a backwards answer, but I think it's realizing suddenly one day how much I missed the sun. So winter is my favorite season, and I think it's easy for me to forget that it's gray all the time because I kind of like that. And then inevitably, every spring, I have a day where it's sunny and warm again, and I go, oh, yeah, this is kind of nice. Spring must be here. And I experienced that this week, so I'm ready to get outside and enjoy.
I feel like I live in a brutal climate. The signs of spring for me are wet snow, like dense, wet, heavy snow, and mud. Just lots and lots of mud.
For me, I love people watching, and I love watching couples who are not just enjoying each other's company, but are intoxicated by each other's presence. And I seem to feel I see more of that in spring, and I just find it delightful.
Mitch, thank you for saying baseball. I guess I have a different sign of spring I'll mention, but I realize I get to watch the Cubs games because I'm out of their catchment area. And I watched them over these last couple of days, and it's sleeting in Cubs Park, and they're playing Wrigley Field, and they're playing baseball. And today it was a downpour, and they took a 2.5-hour break and probably finished the game at this point. But that to me is a sign of spring is those crowd shots of people freezing at baseball games in Illinois. Really, what I wrote down originally with this question was, I've had grants of international teachers come from much more warmer climates to Kent State in January. And for us, it's always kind of, I find it kind of humorous because they can't understand how people can live in this climate. It's just too damn cold. So Aileen and I are not gardeners, but somehow we planted some bulbs outside and some crocus bulbs, and the crocus are the first to come up. So when I would have these folks in, I would walk out my front door, I would see the crocus emerging from the ground, and I would shoot a picture of that, and I would send it to everybody in the group. I didn't pay enough attention to what was in the background, because that was also where my dog or the neighborhood dogs defecated. So I was sending them these bright little flowers, and if you look carefully, you can see some poop that has kind of been washed a little bit by those cold, wet, snowy storms that we, so for me, that is a sign of spring. The flowers come, you know, there's that bright part, and then some of it's just poop. So that's it for everything with our show tonight. Thanks to the firing squad, Mitch, Rit, Gina, Elliot, and myself for being here tonight. It's great to have the group back together. I'm feeling a little rusty. I'm feeling a little rusty tonight. And so, but I'm going to get this show produced and out and have it for people who haven't heard from us in a while. Look for some of these characters on their podcasts on thepodtalk.net. You can find out more about them at circularfiringsquad.net. Make sure you check out the Tech Savvy Professor podcast hosted by Eric and myself. Eric is not with us tonight, but we enjoyed doing that podcast, a nice short one about technology. Our theme music is from Menage a Quad, The Real Swing Chet. That's it for this episode of Circular Firing Squad. Ready, fire, aim.